We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Bryn Aiken, and on today's episode, I will be reviewing Kung Fu Panda 4 and Imaginary. I said that I would also be reviewing Dune 2 this week, but I did not go see it because I didn't want to rush myself, you know, because with the between the shows I was watching and me also kind of being tired Saturday, I just decided to put it off until next week. Although last week it would have been 2 weeks. So I'll go see it on the 15th and I'll either review it next Friday or I'll review it next Saturday, because next week I'm also going to be reviewing, I'll be finishing up X-Men, the animated series, and I'll be doing a review of that too, posting an episode reviewing that. So I'll be reviewing two, I'll be having two episodes next week, my review of Dune 2 and X-Men, my X-Men review. So look forward to those. Of course, I'll probably also mention this at the end of the episode too, because I always do. But yeah, so with that being said, this week will just be two reviews instead of the three I said it was going to be. And I think I'll start off with Kung Fu Panda 4. And I will be going into some spoilers here. So if you haven't seen either movie and you would like to watch them before hearing my thoughts on them, hearing my spoilery thoughts on them, then by all means, please stop the episode and go watch them. But if you still want to watch the movies and you don't care about spoilers, you're still going to go see them anyway, then by all means, yeah, please continue. So, yeah, let's start with Kung Fu Panda 4. So I saw Kung Fu Panda 4 last night. Both It and Imaginary came out, were released last night or Friday. And yeah, the movie basically, you know, it's one of DreamWorks' most popular franchises, up there with Shrek and How to Train Your Dragon and the Madagascar movies. You know, if you don't know what they're about Po, this panda. He's the Kung Fu Panda, voiced by Jack Black, and all of the movies are about him. Well, they're about him becoming the Dragon Warrior and facing new villains each movie that are a threat to the Jade Palace and all of which is where he and his team of Kung Fu Masters, the Furious Five, that's where they all live, the Jade Palace, and that the Valley of Peace. But there's a bunch of villains that are seen as a threat to the Valley of Peace and all of China. And each movie, Po and his friends have to face off against a different adversary. And this one, it's a little different because the Furious Five aren't in this movie. Well, they are, but they're at the very end. They show up during a scene in the mid-credits. Or I guess it's not really a mid-credit scene because the credits are rolling and the scene is playing. So I guess really it's a during-credit scene. because, yeah, the credits are still rolling while the scene's happening. But which I was a little disappointed by, because I loved the Furious Five in the first three, so I was like, oh man, they're not in it. But regardless, the movie. So what's different about this one, or how does this one play out? So basically, this one is continuing from the events of the third one. Po now has Master Oogway, who was Po's master's master and a dear friend of his, Master Shifu. That's Po's master. Po now has Master Oogway's Staff of Wisdom, which he got in the third movie towards the end when he went to the Spirit Realm. And you know, he now has this, he now has the ability to conjure up like a spirit dragon, because he's the Dragon Warrior, during his battles, which is a cool new kind of power-up in a way. And he has to, he teams up. Well, actually, before he teams up with her, Shifu, his master, tells him that, hey, listen, you have been the Dragon Warrior for quite some time now. It's time for you to take your next step in your journey, which would be picking your successor. So he's going to get a promotion. He's going to be the, I forgot exactly what Shifu called it. It was something to the effect of, you're going to be head of the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace. I think that's what it was. Yeah, you're going to be the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace. And you need to pick a successor to, or pick someone to be the next Dragon Warrior. And Poe ends up picking a thief. He crosses paths with this, fox who is a, bandit, a swindler, a thief, if you will, named Jin, voiced by Awkwafina. And they, team up and befriend each other along the way, during their journey to fight and defeat a new adversary, a new villain, who is a sorceress, the Chameleon, voiced by Viola Davis, who I think she does a great job voice acting. And yeah, that's the plot. And also there's a subplot where Poe's dad's, his adopted dad, Pin, who, you know, is his goose. Yeah, is a goose, runs the restaurant in the Valley of Peace, the noodle restaurant. And his panda dad, who we saw at the very end of the second movie and, you know, we fully were introduced to in the third movie, voiced by Bryan Cranston. James Hong. Yeah, James Hong voices Pin, his adopted dad. And, yeah, there's a subplot with Pin and Lee, Poe's panda dad, following after him because they're like, oh, we got to protect our son. and yeah, that's the plot of the movie. I'll start off by saying this. I liked it. I don't think it was better than the third one. Because I recently, before, in anticipation for the fourth one, in preparation for it too, I decided to go back and watch the trilogy because it had been forever since I've seen any of the three previous movies. So I figured, okay, I'll go back and rewatch them. And I loved all three of them. In fact, I thought that they kind of got better with each one in a way. And I loved how they progressed the story throughout each movie. Like, each movie told their own story, but they did progress the overall story of the movies. Like, specifically Poe's journey into becoming the Dragon Warrior and all that. I loved that. I thought that was great. And with this one, it felt like, to me, it felt like Toy Story 4, where it wasn't really necessary. Like, you could have just ended it with the third one, but it wasn't a bad addition to the franchise. I'll say that. Like, it didn't really tarnish the reputation that the franchise, the series of movies has, you know? Although I will say this, I did like Toy Story 4 better than Kung Fu Panda 4, than this one. And even though Toy Story 5, like I said, wasn't really necessary, like I did really enjoy that, and I think I liked it more than the fourth edition or the fourth movie in this series of movies. But that's not to say that I didn't like this. I mean, like I said, even if it wasn't completely necessary and you could have ended things off, you know, with a nice trilogy with the third one, this one was still good. Like, I mean, it was funny throughout. There were a lot of funny moments. The voice acting was fantastic from everyone. All the returning characters, like I said, even though, you know, we didn't get Angelina Jolie, Lucy Liu, Jackie Chan, Seth Rogen, or David Cross back, because they all voiced the Furious Five in the previous three, even though we didn't get them back. We got them back, but they didn't speak. You know, they were in that scene at the very end, the kind of training montage in a way with Jin. But even though, you know, we got the cameo from them at the end, they didn't come back. They didn't have any speaking lines. So while they didn't return, the ones who did return knocked it out of the park like they did in the previous movies. And Bryan Cranston, having only been in the third one, I thought he did a great job voicing Lee again in this one. And I loved, and yeah, some other things I loved. I loved, speaking of like continuing the story, I do love how in the third one, when Poe, because Poe finds out that, you know, Lord Shin in the second movie didn't wipe out all the pandas. It turns out that his father, Lee, and a bunch of other pandas escaped and are living in this secret village in the mountains, like in this like misty, like hided by clouds of mist. There's this beautiful green lush valley up in the mountains, and just hidden away and kept secret because last time it didn't go so well. They had a warlord, they had a lord commit genocide against their race and their species. So yeah, in the third one, yeah, Poe found out about his father. His father meets him, and his adopted father Lee, I mean not Lee, that's his real dad, Pin. He shows up, or he decides to go with Poe and Lee because he's like, I don't really trust him. Poe's been my son for 20 years, and then this guy just shows up out of nowhere thinking he could take my son away from me. That's not happening, and in the third movie, for most of it until the very end, Pin was very jealous of Lee, but then towards the end, he warmed up to him and realized that, you know what, Poe needs you just as much as he needs me. And in this one, like I said, their subplot was they're trying to find Poe and protect him because they both are his dads and they're both worried about his safety. Even though he's, fought and defeated three powerful kung fu masters, and warlords and tyrants, they're still worried for him, which I thought was sweet. It wasn't like they were being overbearing parents, like they weren't being too overbearing. They were still letting him do his own thing, but they were still parents. They were both like, okay, our son needs us, even if he doesn't, even if he says he doesn't, he does need us at least for moral support. And yeah, I thought it was sweet. I loved seeing that that in this movie they truly had become friends. I thought that was nice. And yeah, just seeing the banter between the two of them was great. And yeah, I thought James Hong and Bryan Cranston did a good job at voicing Pain and Lee. Yeah, I thought they were great. I liked the team up of. I liked the addition because we have a couple new characters in this movie. I liked the addition of Awkwafina as Jin, the fox bandit that Poe decides to take under his wing and help track down the chameleon with. I thought she made a good addition. I liked the dynamic, like I said, like the dynamic with Lee and Pin. I liked Poe and Jin's dynamic. I thought they had some pretty good back and forth. They had some pretty good lines, like some back and forth, and I thought it was sweet the friendship they developed. Yeah, it was cool to see kind of Jen turn over a new leaf, where she was always just kind of like looking out for number one, and stealing, stealing anything she could get her hands on, to realizing that, oh, okay, well, there is someone that actually cares about me and respects me and isn't just using me to get what they want, like the chameleon was. And the little twist with her being the chameleon, the one that the chameleon raised as a child, I thought, oh, that was a neat twist. Like, I didn't really, I mean, some people might think it was obvious, but I wasn't really expecting that, so I didn't see it coming. So to me, it was a good twist. I mean, it wasn't like the most shocking twist ever, but I was like, oh shit, I didn't expect that. Okay, I didn't see that coming. But yeah, to me, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't. To me, it didn't seem that obvious. But I guess looking back, it might have been more obvious than I was thinking. But yeah, it wasn't too bad. Oh, and yeah, the new characters. Yeah. Also, in addition to Awkwafina, yeah. The Chameleon, Viola Davis, not the strongest or best villain of the four movies. That, I mean, it's kind of hard to beat when you have Tai Lung in the first one, you have Shin in the second one, and then you have Kai in the third one, all voiced by, great voice actors and voice actors. It's kind of hard to, live up to them, to top them. But I mean, I think, at least in terms of voicing the character, I think Viola Davis did a fantastic job. She wasn't the best of the villain in the franchise. That goes without saying. I mean, to me, but I thought her plan was kind of cool, where she basically was rejected from being taught kung fu because of her size, which again, when she said that, it kind of, I thought it was kind of funny because Mantis, you know, we've spent three movies with Mantis being a member of the Furious Five. And then you have this chameleon in the fourth movie saying, oh yeah, well, I was rejected from Kung Fu because of my size. It's like, wait a minute. But Mantis is a member of the Furious Five, and he's like way smaller than you are. I mean, you can he's still visible. You can still see him, but like you're like twice his size, or twice or three times his size. You're still small, but there's someone who's a master, you know, of this Kung Fu team that's smaller than you. But of course, maybe she tried before Mantis was accepted. You know, maybe there was a size rule prior to Mantis joining the Furious Five. Who knows? You know what? That's my headcanon. I'm going with that. That's probably what it was. I mean, her story I thought was interesting. I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of neat. So because she was rejected from being taught Kung Fu, she decided to, she ends up stealing or getting Jin to get the Staff of Wisdom from Po to open up the spirit realm. And she decides to basically take the spirits, like brain the souls and the spirits of all the previous Kung Fu masters that have died to the mortal realm and just steal their Kung Fu, steal their chi and energy and their Kung Fu. And that way she knows all their Kung Fu and all their special moves. And she can take over China and Juniper City, the city in which she resides. So I thought her plan was cool. And again, I do love how they're continuing with events and places and locations and things that they established in previous movies. Because in the third movie, we were introduced to the spirit realm. Or I'm pretty sure if it wasn't at least mentioned, it may have been mentioned in the previous two movies. But in the third movie, we at least got to see it. We went there for the first time. And you know, we found out more about chi, which is the energy that flows through all living things. We found out that pandas are great at giving chi to people who are like, you know, maybe on the verge of death, and they kind of heal them, bring them back to life. So I thought that was cool that you know, we Po still had the Staff of Wisdom that Oogway gave to him. We went back to we didn't go into the spirit realm, but the spirit realm was brought back up and used as the villain's plan in this movie. And we got to see some of the previous villains. In fact, we actually got Ian McShane back to voice Tai Lung, and I thought he did a great job. And I thought his fight scene with the Chameleon's guards was really cool. He was kind of underutilized, especially considering that he was prominently featured in the trailer and on the poster. Like, he's right next to the Chameleon and, like, above Po in the poster. And I was like, oh, cool, maybe he'll be part of a little bit more of the movie. But, you know, he doesn't really, I mean, it's more of a, it's less of a cameo, because, you know, if it was a cameo, it would just be, oh, like maybe a couple lines and that's it. He does have a few more lines than a cameo would grant someone. You know, like, it's not really a cameo, but it is, he still did kind of feel underutilized to me. That being said, the little time that he did have towards the end in the climactic battle, I thought Ian McShane killed it as Tai Lung, just like he did in the first movie. And, of course, we didn't get... I forgot who voiced Shin. Was it Gary Oldman? I think it was Gary Oldman. We didn't get Shin. We didn't get... we did get them back. We got Shin and Kai, the villains from the 2 and 3. Excuse me, sorry. Let me clear my throat. Sorry, I don't know what... I guess I had some phlegm stuck in my throat. Anyway, sorry, back to the back to the review. That was weird. Okay, there we go. So, even though we got them back, we didn't get Gary... Even though we didn't get Gary Oldman and J.K. Simmons back to voice Shen and Kai, we at least got to see them, which I thought was cool. K-Hew Kwan, who... the actor from, he was in Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I still haven't seen, but I've heard was a great movie, great A24 movie. Oh, and he was also Short Round in The Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones, I think it was the Was that the second or third Indiana Jones? Anyway, he was in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Oh, and he was Data in the Goonies. Okay, so he was in a few movies. He was kind of a child actor in the 80s. Okay, huh. Okay, but yeah, so, I've heard he was a great actor. I've heard he was great in Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I also heard he was pretty good in season two of Loki. Two things that I have not seen yet. I have not seen season two of Loki or Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I've heard he was a good actor. And I thought he did pretty good as this pangolin character that Jin kind of grew up with on the streets before the chameleon took her in. I thought he was pretty funny. He was pretty good. What was his name? Oh, Han. Yeah, Han, that was his name. He was great. And yeah, he did a good job. So I think overall, like I said, it was pretty consistently funny throughout. The animation was the best that the movies have ever been, and that should go without saying, considering that it's been 8 years since the previous one. So you would assume and expect that the animation would be even better than the previous entry, that, yeah, the animation's fantastic. It was pretty consistently funny throughout. The voice acting, top-notch. The story, and yeah, but the story being a little, well, okay, the story wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad, but it was maybe a little unnecessary. And also, it would have been kind of cool to have Poe train Jin a little bit more, because for the most of the movie, it's just them going after the chameleon, which isn't bad. I mean, they're going after the villain, obviously. They have to, because they're going to take over the entirety of China. But it would have been cool to have maybe Poe act a little bit more of a mentor towards Jin. Like, it would have been cool to have dedicated a little bit more of the movie to them training. Kind of like how we saw at the very end when the Furious Five show up and we get that little training scene during the credits. But still, it was cool that Poe did kind of find someone to pass on the mantle of Dragon Warrior to, and form this nice friendship. I'm trying to think of what else to say. I guess that's it. So yeah, and again, like I said at the beginning of the review, even though it was an unnecessary sequel like Toy Story 4, I thought it was a nice addition to the franchise, an unnecessary but nice addition to the franchise that didn't tarnish the reputation or anything really in the first three movies, or in the previous three movies. I still enjoyed it, and I'm not unhappy with the finished product. I'm fine that it exists, and I will still watch it again if I ever go through the movies, because, like I said, the animation and humor were fantastic, and the voice acting was great. So even though the story was maybe a little subpar, and overall, the movie wasn't really necessary, I still enjoyed it enough to where it's a movie that I will watch again if I'm watching the movies. Like if I'm, binging through the movies in the future, I'm not gonna not watch this one because it was unnecessary. You know what I mean? So I think overall, I'd give it a 7.5. So it's close to the first three. The first three are all like 8.5s. This is like a 7.5, which I don't think's that bad. So it's close. But it's not my favorite. I think it's a little under, I don't know. I hate to say that it's under all three of them. It's just, like I said, it's 7.5. The others are 8s and 8.5s. So it's just barely under the other three. But still, for it to be only barely under the previous three, it's not too bad. So yeah, I think that's what I'd rank it. Oh, and also, I loved the cover that Jack Black did at the end of the movie. During the scene in the credits where Jin is being trained by the Furious Five, there is Jack Black sings a cover, or he covers the song "Baby One More Time" by Britney Spears. and it's probably even better than the original, which the original was already great, but just hearing Jack Black, Jack Black has a great singing voice. I mean, Peaches, obviously, because he had that whole song Peaches in the Super Mario Brothers movie last year when he played Bowser, which that song was great. And now he's got this song at the very end of another animated movie that he's the star in. And even though it's a cover of a song that already exists, it was fantastic. Like, it was a great cover that it's one of those covers that kind of, in a way, blows the other cover out of the water. But, and that, again, that's not me putting down the original, because the original is a catchy, great song too. But yeah, it's Jack Black singing his ass off, in a great, yeah. And it's just the vocals and range of his voice is fantastic. And he does a great job doing the cover justice and then some. So yeah, I guess that does it for this one. Yeah, overall, DreamWorks, another, you know, huge franchise for them. Obviously, they're like, oh, well, we can make some more money making a fourth one. But they put enough effort into it to where it didn't feel like a, even though if it was, like I said, quote unquote, unnecessary, it didn't feel, it didn't tarnish the other three movies. And it didn't feel like a soulless cash grab. You know, that you could tell there was effort put into the humor and animation, and even to the story to a lesser extent. Even though, like I said, the story wasn't the best it could have been. It certainly didn't rival the stories in the other three, you know? Now, I've heard things about this Megamind sequel that was released on Peacock, and even though I have not seen it yet, I almost kind of don't want to, because I love the first movie so much, and I have a feeling that I'm not going to like the second one at all, considering that it's got like a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, and everything I've heard from everyone who's watched it, all the critics and all the people on YouTube that have reacted to it have been like, yeah, this is shit. Like, and what the trailer, when I saw the trailer, I'm like, the animation, why is it so much of a downgrade? You know how much people liked the first one. The animation in the first one is still great, you know, 14 years later. And then you come out with this and it's like TV quality or direct to DVD quality. Like, why? You know, you couldn't have put more effort into the anime. You couldn't have done what you did with Kung Fu Panda 4. You couldn't have, because there were already two previous Kung Fu Panda movies. The effort you put into Kung Fu Panda 4, you couldn't have put that much effort into the Megamind 2. I don't know. Anyway, I haven't seen the movie yet, but still, I mean, from what I've seen, I feel like it will definitely not hold a candle to the first one. But yeah, sorry, little Megamind 10 rant on the sequel that I haven't seen yet. but yeah, so that does it for my review of Kung Fu Panda 4. And now let's move on to my review for Imaginary. And now let's move on to my review for Imaginary. So Imaginary is the latest Blumhouse horror movie. If you don't know, well, for those of you who don't know, yeah, Blumhouse is a production company that, was it Edward Blum? What was his name? The Jason Blum, yeah, sorry. Amy Israel and Jason Blum, yeah, are the founders of Blumhouse, which are, yeah, a production studio. And, oh, it was originally formerly Blum Israel Productions, but it was only for 2 years, 2000 to 2002. Huh. I guess maybe Amy dropped out. But anyway, so yeah. I'm sorry, I was looking at the Wikipedia page and IMDb about the production company. But yeah, so getting back on track, Imaginary is the latest in the Blumhouse production studio line of horror movies. And the basic plot is, it is about this woman who moves in with her husband and her stepdaughters. She married this guy who had children, and their mother is mentally ill, and he remarried, and the two of them, she is Jessica. The wife's name is Jessica. The husband is Max, and their children are Alice, which is the youngest of the daughters. She's the youngest of the daughters, and she's like 8, not 7, 8 maybe. and Taylor, who is 15, she's the oldest. They all move into Jessica's childhood home from an apartment. I think they're like in an apartment. They moved out of their apartment into Jessica's childhood home. And Alice finds a stuffed teddy bear in hidden way in a crawl space in the basement named Chauncey. And she quickly takes a liking to Chauncey, calling him her imaginary friend, and having tea parties with him and playing hide and seek, you know, things children do with imaginary friends and toys all the time. But throughout the movie, something happens to where it gets progressively more and more weird, the things that Alice and Chauncey are doing. And Jessica's like, she's like, okay, at first this was cute. This is getting kind of weird now. like she starts collecting dead bugs, and she almost impales her hand with a nail. And she's like, okay, yeah, well, what is going on? And she finds out that the imaginary friend that Alice has, Chauncey, is actually a demon that tethered himself or itself to Alice. And because, they explain in the movie, but it's like, oh, well, children have such ripe creative imaginations that the demons, the imaginary friends, tether themselves to them and feed off their creativity and their imagination. And so the demon takes Alice to it's like an imaginary dimension, and Jessica and Taylor have to go get her back, which that really happens in like the last third of the movie. Most of it's a build up to her entering Chauncey's world. It's funny because I went to go see this morning. I went to go see Imaginary this morning. I was going to go see It and Kung Fu Panda 4 back to back last night, but I was tired and I was like, you know what? I can just go tomorrow to see one of these. I don't have to go see them both back to back. That's exhausting, or it sounds exhausting. but yeah, so I went to go see this one this morning, and the guy who gave me my ticket told me, he's like, he kind of gave me a look, and I was like, you had a disappointed look. What's going on? And he mentioned how much people were hating the movie. And I was like, okay, I'll see what I think of it. And I didn't hate it. I mean, okay. It could have been better. I'll say this. It could have been better. And I think between the two movies that I saw, I definitely liked and thought Kung Fu Panda 4 was the superior film. but I did enjoy it. I thought that, I thought the acting was really good. I thought all the actors did a pretty good job, especially DeWanda Wise, who plays Jessica. I thought she did a great job, and I have not seen her. I haven't really seen her in anything before. What has she been in? Okay, everything that I've seen her in. Okay, it seems like most of what she's been in has been short films. Okay. So, oh, well, she was in Jurassic World Dominion. Okay. Knucklehead. Okay, but yeah, she hasn't had too many big roles. She's mostly been like recurring or side characters in movies. She's been in a few episodes of Law and Order, like two episodes. She was in an episode of the new Twilight Zone. She was in one episode of Boardwalk Empire, one episode of The Good Wife. So she's not a huge, actor or actress. But I will say this, she did a great job for being the main character in a horror movie, or just a main character in a movie in general. I really liked her. I thought she did a great job playing this stepmom who is trying to get her husband's new kids, essentially her new daughters, to like her. And she's trying to be a good mom, trying to be supportive and loving and caring for them. And meanwhile, she's also dealing with her dad and we find out that her mother had cancer and died when she was a little girl, and her father at some point afterwards went crazy and became mentally ill and kind of went into like just shut out. Kind of like suppressed his emotions and feelings, and he just kind of seems like he maybe has dementia. You know, you're not quite sure until later in the movie what exactly happened. But when we see him, or when we see her going to the assisted living home and trying to talk to him and just, you know, spend some time with him, we see that whatever happened to him, it probably had something to do with the mom, probably had something to do with a little bit of something else too. Not just, you know, his wife dying. It also probably had something to do with the supernatural spooky shit that's going on in the movie. And but again, you don't know quite what happened, what went down after her mom died. But I think DaWanda Wise does a great job at playing this character of Jessica. And she's gorgeous too. Like I was just watching the whole movie. I was like, you are beautiful. Just her face, she has beautiful brown eyes, her hair, like her black curly hair that just flows down to her shoulders. I don't know. I guess I'm gushing a little bit, but but I was watching the whole movie. I'm like, you are beautiful. But she did. She knocked it. To me, she knocked it out of the park playing this character. And I loved her. I loved her, even though he leaves about halfway through the movie because his job is like he's a musician. At least I think he's, because he says he's going on tour. Yeah, so he's got to be a musician. Her husband Max is a musician, and even though he's gone for about half the movie, maybe a little bit more than half the movie, the screen time that he has, his actor Tom Payne, I thought did a good job playing him. Who it's funny because it took me a second to realize who he was, because I think he was speaking in a sort of British accent or speaking in some kind of accent, and he also didn't have as long of a beard and his hair wasn't quite as long, but I was like, oh, wait, that's Jesus from The Walking Dead. And I was like, oh, yeah, Tom Payne. Yeah, Jesus. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Because I thought he was pretty good in The Walking Dead. And I was like, why does he look so familiar? And then I'm like, that's who he is. Okay. But I liked their dynamic, their chemistry. I thought Jessica and Max made a cute couple. And I thought they made good parents, too. And yeah, I thought, like I said, I thought Jessica was a good mom, good stepmom, and a good mom to her two new daughters, you know. and the daughters themselves, Piper Braun played Alice, the youngest daughter. I thought she did a pretty good job, and I liked the scenes where she was talking to Chauncey. I thought she was pretty good at kind of making the situation a little bit more creepier. Especially that scene where her and her therapist are talking and she's talking to Chauncey and she's doing Chauncey's voice. And, we find out that actually Chauncey was speaking to her. She wasn't putting on a voice at all. It was actually Chauncey speaking to her. But the scene where they're talking and she's like, I can't be friends with you anymore. You're freaking everyone out. You're freaking me out. And she starts screaming, and that whole intense scene where they're arguing, I was like, oh, that was pretty good. Pretty good acting from her. And who plays Tegan? Her name's spelled T-A-E-G-E-N. Maybe Tegan. I'm going to go with Tegan. Tegan Burns plays Taylor, the oldest daughter. And I thought she did pretty good too. And, you know, at first she kind of starts off as this very moody teenager in a way, who doesn't want anything to do with Jessica because she's she's her dad's new favorite. she's the new mom, and she doesn't want her coming in and changing everything in their lives, because she's like, hey, no, we still have our own mom. Don't come meddling in our lives. Stay away. And, just upset that this whole, their dynamic has changed dramatically with having a new mother brought into the picture. But throughout the course of the movie, especially when they start to realize what's going on with Alice and Chauncey, Jessica does warm up to her And, you know, to the point where by the end, she definitely has become like a daughter to Jessica. And Jessica has become a mom to her. And so I thought it was sweet seeing that her war slowly but surely warm up to Jessica. And just how earnest and sincere Jessica was at wanting to be a mother to Alice and Taylor. I was like, oh, that's sweet. And in fact, there was like maybe a scene or two that actually got me to tear up a little bit, just because I was like, man, her acting's really good. And just again, like how, like I said, how sincere and sweet and genuine she was with wanting to make this work, not only with, you know, being married to Max, but also being a mother, mother figure and mom to, Alice and Taylor. So yeah, I enjoyed that. The movie wasn't, you know, for it being a horror movie and having seen the trailers before going to see the movie, I expected it to be a little creepier, a little more horrific than it was. There was like one or two scenes where they kind of got me with a jump scare or two, where I either leaned back or my skin kind of, or my shoulders bounced or my skin kind of crawled for a second. But for the most part, it wasn't really, nothing really got me like, oh shit, you know, like I didn't have an oh shit moment. Except for like I said, those one or two times, where we saw like Chauncey's true form, which by the way, that he did look legitimately creepy. I was like, oh shit, that is a good design. Like, the guy who played Chauncey in the suit, cause there's a stuffed bear version of Chauncey. But then there's also, towards the end, when they go to the imaginary zone or whatever it's called, you know, the imaginary world, the dimension, we see him like once before, but in the final act, in the third act of the movie, when they go to his world, and to try to get Alice back, Taylor and Jessica are like running around trying to find her. And we do see Chauncey's true form, this demonic, bear with these giant hands and it's weird. Like his legs, like his forearms and the bottoms of his legs are very thick, but then like his upper arms and upper legs, like the thighs, are very skinny. And then he's got this huge head and these like black eyes with the white pupils, and he's got these very sharp, like almost like a deranged coked out saber tooth which is kind of a weird way to put it, but he's got like these teeth from a saber-toothed tiger, like just like a dinosaur, and they're just like these deranged, coked out looking rabid, ravenous teeth. And he's got this long spindly tongue, he's got these long fingers and claws. And I was like, I saw in the movie, but I forgot what their names were, but the people who did who made that costume, and I'm assuming there was maybe a little bit of CGI involved whenever he was like running around growling, you know, but whoever did the costume on Chauncey, I was like, okay, that they deserve a 10 out of 10 for that, because that costume is a pretty cool costume and does look pretty creepy. Dane DeLigrio, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He did a good job. Because I'm assuming I think that was him in the costume, because it says Dane DeLigrio as Chauncey Bear. So yeah, he did a fantastic job running around in that suit, kind of braining Chauncey to life in a way. And the people who made the costume also, and also I guess animated the scenes where there was some CGI involved, because I'm sure it wasn't all practical. It wasn't all a suit. Well, it wasn't all practical effects. I'm sure there was a little bit of CGI in there. But they deserve props too, because they knocked it out of the park with the costume. So yeah, and obviously there were a few things that I spoiled a few things, but I didn't spoil as much as I did with Kung Fu Panda 4. And even then there were a few things I didn't spoil about that movie either. But yeah, so I guess that's kind of all I have to say about this movie. Overall, not Blumhouse's best, but I don't think it was their worst. I feel like a lot of I get kind of where the critics are coming from, where it's not quite that scary. and it just kind of maybe meanders out towards the end, but I still liked it. I mean, yeah, I agree with him. It could have been more scary, and I was kind of expecting it to be. And part of me was maybe a little disappointed it wasn't, but the acting from everyone, I was engaged. You know, I wanted to see where it was going. I thought Chauncey's true form was creepy and cool looking. I thought the imaginary world was kind of cool, how it was like this blue, dimly lit checkerboard M.C. Escher painting type looking world where all these different, it's this different hallways and different doors leading to different, imaginary, imaginary realms in a way, or different memories. I thought that was cool and creative. And you know, how they made the door to the other world. I thought that was pretty cool. So it was creative. It was definitely, forgive my pun, but it was definitely imaginative in a way. But it wasn't quite as horrifying as the trailers made it out to be and how I thought it would be having seen the trailers. But yeah, that was creative. Chauncey's true form was creepy and cool and creative looking. The acting from everyone was, I thought, pretty good. Not the best, but I was like, oh, they're pretty good. The characters, I liked them, especially Jessica. And again, not just because I thought DaWanda Wise was beautiful, because she is, but because I actually thought she was a good character and a good mom. The girls who played Piper Braun and Tegan Burns, I thought did a good job playing the daughters. And again, even though he's gone for half the movie, I thought Tom Payne played the part of Max pretty well, played the husband well. And yeah, so you know, I don't think, I mean, they kind of set it up to where, oh, Chauncey's not dead. He's tethered himself to another kid, which I guess spoilers, spoilers for the very end of the movie. So I mean, I guess if the movie does well enough, and also considering that Blumhouse makes their movies cheaply, one to save money, but also to make money, because they're like, because most of the time they're like, Jason Blum's like, hey, keep the budget in the double digit millions, like 10, maybe 20 million. So that way, no matter if the movie's good or bad, we'll make money on it and it'll turn a profit, which is smart. 'Cause you know, like some of their movies haven't been too well received by audiences and critics. There are a lot of their movies that the ones that aren't like the most well received by audiences and critics, they do still turn a profit because the movies are on a budget. They don't have these way overblown budgets. Like they're not in the hundred millions. They're in the tens of millions, the dozens, you know, like they're in the double digit millions, not the triple digit millions that a lot of blockbusters seem to have. So I mean, that's a smart business move because whatever the movie, whether it's critically adored or critically panned or panned or loved by the audiences, or you know, both panned by critics and audiences or loved by critics and audiences, no matter the outcome from everyone involved who going to see the movie's more than likely to turn a profit because the budgets are small enough. And also they use the budget well because you know, like I said, there's obviously a costume involved with Chauncey, but there's a little bit of special effects involved with him, and there's also another imaginary friend or two we see that has a little bit of CGI involved, but it's also dimly lit in a way, and it's not this grand spectacle that's like the focus of the movie. You know, we don't spend so much time with the imaginary friends to where if the CGI was on a budget, it would look obvious. You know what I mean? So I think that is a smart business move to keep the films on a small enough budget so that way you can make profits from the movie. You know, enough people will go see the movies and like them maybe enough to where, oh, we'll get our budget back and then some. We'll get a little bit more. I mean, we're not, you know, we might not, they might not be the biggest movies of that week, but they'll definitely make some money back. And hopefully, and more than likely, we'll make our profit. We'll make over the budget of the movie. So yeah, I mean, Jason Blum knows what he's doing for the most part with when it comes to their movies. They also, and this isn't their first movie this year, they also released Night Swim back in January, which I was going to go see, but I didn't. And I didn't end up going to see it, and I heard that it wasn't that good, so who knows? But yeah, I mean, for the most part, They have produced a lot of movies that, well, I haven't seen all of them, but the ones I've seen, I do like. Like I like the Halloween trilogy, but I did kind of prefer the first one, the 2018, the best. And I liked Megan, which came out last year. Or was it last year? Yeah, last year, sorry. Yeah, which came out in January of last year. And then, there's some that I haven't seen, but a lot that I've heard were okay at best. But it's kind of a mixed bag, I guess, when it comes to Blumhouse movies. You can get something really good or something really bad or something kind of in the middle. And this was, I don't know if I'd say really good. It was maybe somewhere in the middle. But yeah, so everything, like I said, the acting, costume on Chauncey, the creativeness of the imaginary world, and friends tethering, imaginary friends that are demons that tether themselves to children, I thought was kind of a neat concept. They could have gone a little bit farther with the concept and done a little bit more with it, but I thought that was cool. What they did do with it was cool. The acting from everyone was good. And overall, I don't regret having watched it. It won't be something like Kung Fu Panda 4 where I watch, I'll watch Kung Fu Panda more probably than I will Imaginary on further rewatches. But for the most part, I don't regret having seen it. So I think. And like I said, I did like Kung Fu Panda 4 better between the two. So I think I'll give this one a 7. Yeah, just a 7 out of 10. I definitely liked it better than Lisa Frankenstein. I feel like it had more going on. I was more invested in what was happening in this movie than I was Lisa Frankenstein. Because I think I gave that like a 6 or a 6.5 out of 10. So I gave that an even lower score than I gave this one. So that should tell you something. But yeah, so I guess that does it for my review of Imaginary. My reviews of Kung Fu Panda 4 and Imaginary. Yeah, that's the end of this episode. So, yeah, I hope you all, I hope you all enjoyed tonight's episode, or today's episode. Next week, like I said in the beginning of the episode, I will be reviewing and I'll probably review this first, but I'll be reviewing the X-Men the Animated Series, and I'll also be reviewing Dune Part 2. So I'll be releasing two episodes next week. I'm not sure if it'll be Friday for the X-Men review and Saturday for Dune 2, or if I'll just release them both back to back on Saturday. But either way, Friday and or Saturday, look out for two episodes next weekend. And yeah, so I hope you all, and as always, I hope you all have a great weekend, and I will see you all next Friday or Saturday. And until then, take care.